Hello, everybody. Dr. Ben Edwards here. You're the Cure. Welcome to another episode. I'm super excited to have, I believe, a third appearance of Barbara Lowe Fisher, the National Vaccine Information Center, NV, as in Victor, NVIC.org. Go check it out. Full of information about vaccines. We need to know the pros and the cons, the risk and the benefit, so we can make an educated decision about doing a medical therapy or medical procedure to a individual, especially a healthy individual. So I encourage everybody to go there and check that out and get all the information there. Barbara Lowe Fisher, thank you. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for inviting me again. We always have an interesting conversation.
We do, and I think informative, and really that's the purpose of our show is to inform people so that they can make the diet and lifestyle choices that will set their body up to be healthy so that it can do what God designed it to do. And a big part of that is determining whether a vaccine would be appropriate for an individual. Obviously not a one-size-fits-all approach to medicine, but a very individualized approach is what we try to do here. So thank you for all you're doing and your organization is doing. I wanted to bring you back. We had you not too long ago, but wanted to bring you back after kind of all the big controversy and hit lists are being published on anti-vaxxers and lots of disinformation, misinformation. I've even been called basically a disinformation guy after some testimony I gave recently. But you and your group, really, y'all were the original quote-unquote anti-vaxxers, which, by the way, I've told my listeners, if they are consuming news and information from a source that uses anti-vaxxer term, that they should probably just quit consuming information from there. But you were one of the originals, maybe the original source of all this anti-vaccine information. So I think it's a great opportunity for us to bring you on and let you kind of share some of what went on with your conference in October and then through into the new year. A hit list came out. So just kind of bring the listeners up to speed on that whole story, if you don't mind.
Sure. Well, in reference to NVIC being the oldest and largest, we are. We were the group of parents in the late 20th century, 1982, that challenged the use of the DPT vaccine, the whole cell pertussis vaccine in DPT, which is probably, well, it is one of the most reactive vaccines we've used. The COVID vaccine is going to surpass it in terms of reactivity, I think. But we worked for 14 years to get a less reactive DTaP vaccine. But we were the, you know, when Harris Coulter and I published A Shot in the Dark, DPT, A Shot in the Dark in 1985, Harkup Race Ivanovich published it. That was a shocking, I mean, they were furious. The public health infrastructure was furious that we had put together this information and referenced it on the toxicity of the whole cell pertussis vaccine. So, you know, we worked with Congress on the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act, which recognized that vaccines do injure and kill people, that it's not a myth. And that was something that the government has never really forgiven us for. And in government, I mean the Department of Health and Human Services, the Department of Justice. They were all against this law in 86 that admitted that vaccines cause injury and death, because their story was, well, you know, we really don't think it does that, and if it does, it's so rare it's not even able to be statistically analyzed or, you know, acknowledged. So I wanted to say that because it's true that, you know, in the last 40 years since we have been doing this work, other organizations have come up, okay, other individuals, many of whom attended our conferences, our public conferences that we started in 1997, we held one in 2000, 2002, 2009, but many other individuals, doctors and organizations have come up behind us and have adopted much of the messaging that we have been putting out there, which is first and foremost that informed consent is an ethical principle that should not be violated when it comes to the use of pharmaceutical products like vaccines that carry a risk of injury or death. So within that context, We held this 2020 conference, it was called the Fifth International Public Conference on Vaccination, Protecting Health and Autonomy in the 21st Century. And it was 2 years in the making, and we had booked a hotel in Washington, D.C. for October 2021, had a contract at a big hotel in the Washington, D.C. area. And when the pandemic, the COVID pandemic was declared in March of 2020, all of a sudden, and all the travel restrictions and masking and the social distancing was put in place, we realized that there was probably not going to be any way that we could get people to this conference in October of 2020. So we had to make a decision about whether to cancel it or to go ahead and try to pivot to an online conference. Now, there have been very few online conferences, certainly none of the size that we pulled off in October. Now, there have been other conferences since then, but we were really the first to have a big conference on vaccine issues and include it, certainly the first on COVID-19 vaccines and on COVID disease. So we engaged, we got professional help to try to pivot to an online conference, to build a website, to get security so that we knew that we wouldn't be taken down in the, because we knew that we would be a target. And we were managed to do it. We managed to pull off this conference in October of 2020. There were 51 speakers. It was scientists, physicians, public activists, parents. There were. I mean, I can go through the list. It's 51 people, but they came from all over the world. And we're talking about topics like aluminum toxicity and human health. That's Chris Exley, very well-known aluminum expert in the world.
Just
Jacob Puglio
side
from
note
India.
On, a side note real quick on Exley. Didn't his funding just get pulled recently?
Yes. He is being punished for the incredible work he's done on analyzing aluminum in vaccines, the content of aluminum in vaccines, the biological mechanism of how aluminum can cause brain inflammation and brain damage. And he's really a leading world expert, but he is being targeted, and his research, they're trying to stop his research. He's published in blue chip medical journals. So I don't know what's going to happen to Chris, but he's a very courageous man.
Yeah.
And he did speak at our conference. Most of the doctors and scientists who spoke at our conference, particularly from across the, in Europe and other parts of the world, were taking a big risk to do it with their careers, to speak there. So I was very grateful to them for standing up, as I have been all along since we've been doing this conference, starting in 1997, because I know that they do take a risk, and you know that yourself personally. And it's just a sad that you can't have a civil conversation about these issues and look at the science and be critical of government policy and government recommendations and certainly government mandates without being targeted.
Yeah.
But it's especially bad right now because of the cancel culture and the attacks on freedom of speech and, well, attacks really on the First Amendment rights in this country.
Right.
So it's within that context that we tried to hold this conference. I had a rabbi, I had a Catholic bishop and a Catholic priest. We had a very well-known author who talked about the role of freedom of conscience for Martin Luther in the Protestant religion. We had a parent of Stephanie Christner, who actually is on our board, and she's a doctor whose little girl died, her baby died after a series of vaccinations. We had, of course, Bob Sears, who a lot of people know because he's written several books about vaccination. We had so many people, you know, who, at the conference who are well-known and who spoke from experience. And our conference was a pay-per-view conference in October, but after that conference was held, by December, within 2 months, a major attack was launched on that conference publicly by a group called the Center for Countering Digital Hate, which has not really revealed the sources of its funding, and we suspect it is a front group for pharma and some other folks that are associated with pharma. But they attacked our conference. They tried to characterize it as a secret meeting, like of conspirators, and a lot of false and defamatory information that was put out in this report on the anti-vaxxer playbook. MVIC was the target, but they also mentioned other groups and individuals like Dale Bigtree and Robert Kennedy and Sherry Tenpenny and others who have been prominent in critical of vaccine policy and law. And so their goal, the goal of the Center for Countering Digital Hate that is UK-based, is to get anyone who criticizes vaccines eliminated from social media platforms. Well, by March, Facebook deplatformed MVIC, and the next month in April, Instagram deplatformed MVIC. Those two accounts were the largest social media followers we had. Over 300,000 people were following us on those two. And so, you know, we then, obviously, as most people are going over to other types of platforms on social media that don't censor, such as Gab and Telegram and MeWe. We're looking at those platforms, and there, I think there's going to be other platforms that come out. But to make a long story short, our conference was a success. When we were deplatformed by Facebook and Instagram, my response was, I'm opening up the entire conference for free to everybody in the world. And that's exactly what we did. You can go on to nvic.org, and on the home page at the top, view, I can't remember the exact words, but it's right at the top. You can click on and go right to the conference, and you can view all of the video presentations for free.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Click for free on-demand playback of NVIC's 2020 conference. And I've watched some of those. Probably my favorite that I've watched, I sure haven't watched them all yet, but Dennis Rancourt's presentation on all-cause mortality numbers was really good, and I'm sure there are many, many great ones. What would you say was kind of the take-home message, if you can even, with 51 speakers, it might be too hard to give a brief take-home, but what were some of your highlights or favorite points?
Well, you know, we had different themes. Like the first day was a lot of the hard science. A lot of the speakers were speaking about COVID-19 and COVID-19 vaccines. But we also had people like Hsin-Hung Lee who talked about HPV vaccine and cervical cancer. Teresa Deischer, human fetal cells to make vaccines. We had Dr. Deeth on inflammation, epigenetics, and autism. So the first day was really about the science. And that night we had an advocacy portion where we talked about how do you go into the state legislatures, because in this country vaccine laws are state laws. How do you go into these legislatures and, like you testified recently in the Texas legislature, but how do you, as a grassroots vaccine safety and informed consent advocate, how can you be active in your state? We also had some people from international other countries that gave us a snapshot of like what's happening in Canada and Europe with regard to vaccine laws. The second day, we had the paradigm shift to health and liberty, and that's where we had our faith community representatives talk about things like respecting life and guarding your soul, rejecting the culture of death to embrace the sanctity of life, the moral right to exercise freedom of conscience, you know, this whole idea that there is an ethical principle here, freedom of conscience, freedom of religious belief, freedom to exercise informed consent. That's kind of what that theme was that day. Larry Pilevsky, another doctor, pediatrician, talked about the physician's duty to first do no harm. So this was kind of going into, and then we kind of ended the day with looking at some of the, like, vitalism and chiropractic, some of the issues that segued into the next day, which was about other ways to stay healthy. We had Raising Healthy Families, the 100-Year Lifestyle Way. We talked about adult vaccine mandates. Sherry Penny talked about those, which, of course, we're seeing right now. And so it was kind of like a holistic health day, as well as some of the issues like electronic health care records tracking you from birth to death, psychological warfare in the COVID-19 era. I mean, it's really a potpourri of topics that are being discussed today on vaccination, vaccine science, health, policy, and law, and ethics. So, you know, I would really encourage people to check it out. It is free, and it's something that you can go through at your leisure. You can look at one presentation a night. It would take you 50 days to do that. But, you know, it's something you could just work your way through and really get a very good education about what this issue is about.
Yep. Well, thank you for putting that on. I knew that must have taken a lot of effort, but man, such beneficial information on there, such a great lineup of speakers. And again, back to informed consent and educating not only my patients here and listeners, but in general, I mean, the amount of education someone can get through your site and through that conference is amazing. I want to shift to the censorship a little more. I mean, it's hard to believe we're still dealing with this, and it's allowed to go on. It's like so much of this past 12 months is unbelievable. And it's like we're in a nightmare and not, just can't wake up out of it, but it just continues. So, I mean, you've been in this this world for so long, and like I said, I don't even like to use the word anti-vaxxer. It's informed consent. It's information about vaccines so people can make a wise choice for themselves and a customized choice for themselves. So you've been in that space for so long, but now it's front and center and has been for many, many months. And it's like the whole world now, or the whole population. There's so many emails and phone calls I've been getting from people that I would call kind of your standard American, conventional minded, you know, trusted every single conventional medical thing coming out of mainstream media. And suddenly I think now this is in the spotlight so much. So what is your sense? Although there's been a lot of censorship, do you sense there's more people becoming informed? There's more people seeking out information from you and your team? Just your overall sense of where we're at there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do think that this has been an unprecedented year. I think it's historic because I think I've always said that vaccination, mandatory vaccination, is the tip of the spear in the culture wars that are going on in the 21st century in this country and around the world, but particularly in this country. Why particularly here? Because we've been the standard bearer for individual liberty. Our country, our constitution, we're a constitutional republic. We democratically elect our lawmakers, but we are not a democracy. We're a constitutional republic. And that means that our constitution protects minorities. It's not just simply a rule by the majority. The minorities are protected or supposed to be protected in this country. Certainly, our issue, which is vaccine freedom of choice, is at the current time still a minority issue. Not a minority issue, but we still have a minority of citizens in the country, although I would say that it is growing. It is a growing minority. There's no question after this year.
Right.
Because people have seen, when you do not put any limits on this utilitarian idea that everything has to be done for the greater good, that the individual life can be devalued, that you are selfish if you think about yourself or your family, that everything has to be done for the other person or the aggregate, the society, that's utilitarianism. Some can be sacrificed to the rest. And I've talked about informed consent. I really framed the informed consent issue in the 1990s with regard to vaccination. I did it, the first time I did it nationally was on a debate on the Today Show with a physician from Johns Hopkins, Neil Halsey, and where I brought up the issue of the Nuremberg Code and the whole idea that no, this is not communist China. This is America, where we have the right to make decisions for ourselves and our children, health decisions, without having the government basically tell us that we can't do it. It was a historic, really historic debate. I also brought up the chronic disease and disability epidemic and said, we don't have any idea whether all these vaccines that we're giving our children are compromising them and setting them up for chronic disease later in life. We're going to cut within a very couple of weeks of my doing that debate on the Today Show. That was when they still allowed people to actually have these conversations in the mainstream media. I was asked to make a presentation at the Department of Health and Human Services in Washington, D.C. Now, I went and I made a 20-minute presentation on the moral right to conscientious religious, the conscientious philosophical and personal belief exemption, which included religious exemption. That statement, which was referenced, is on our website under About Us and Informed Consent. And it really is still true today, what I said back then in 1997, where I made this argument from a historical perspective why we need to respect the informed consent ethic in the United States. And I talked about the doctor's trial at Nuremberg, which was a very important event after World War II, where doctors were charged for crimes against humanity. The doctor's defense was utilitarian. Utilitarianism. Again, some can be sacrificed for the rest. And they made the argument that they had done the experiments on captive people in order to advance science and to better humanity's the health of humanity. Okay, some can be sacrificed for the rest. Well, the judges at Nuremberg said, no, utilitarianism is a pseudo-ethic. Utilitarianism does not belong, should not be used to buttress public policy, because they were saying they were following orders and they were doing it for the advancement of science. Well, when you take a look around today, that is exactly what is being said. Again, everybody's got to get the COVID-19 vaccine. It doesn't matter if you've had COVID and have T-cell immunity or antibodies. Actually, T-cell immunity appears to be more important than antibodies for this one. But it doesn't matter if you've already had COVID-19 and recovered from it and have natural immunity. It doesn't matter if you've got a history of autoimmunity or neurological problems. It doesn't matter. Everyone's got to do it for the greater good. Mm-hmm. And that's a devaluation of the individual life in service to the rest. And so I have always felt that the problem is this mentality, this collectivist sort of utilitarianism idea that is really what we need to take a look at and have a robust public conversation about. Because there are a lot of people who don't agree with that, do not agree with that philosophy that, as I said, the judges at Nuremberg considered to be a pseudo-ethic utilitarianism. Hmm. So this is a very important time in our history. And I believe that people are starting to wake up and see that all is not, everything they're being told by the government, being told in the media, is not the truth and nothing but the truth. Yeah. There's something going on behind this. And all you have to do is go to the World Economic Forum website. And there you will see a page called The Great Reset. Now, I thought the Great Reset was some kind of conspiracy theory. No, it's real. And it involves the World Health Organization and the United Nations and the major corporations of the world, and they're very straightforward about it. It's a reset of our entire economy, global economy, the U.S. economy, and the most worrying part of it is a lot of it is about taking away individual rights. So the governments that have partnerships, financial partnerships, with these big corporations, including the pharmaceutical industry, can run the show. Mm-hmm. So I'm very, very concerned, you know, that if enough people don't wake up soon enough, we're going to be in a lot of trouble in another 5-10 years.
Yeah.
But I'm very hopeful, because I do think the spirit of freedom and the respect for the Bill of Rights of the U.S. Constitution is alive and well. I think, again, what you read in the media and what's really going on in the homes and the offices and the streets of America is very different from what you read in the mainstream media. And I think there is a conversation going on, and I think that we will see, you know, when these elections are held in the next few years, we will see whether or not we can turn this around.
Yeah. Well, I would concur with that. The little bit that I've read in the mainstream media about the testimony in the Texas Senate a couple weeks ago versus all the comments I've received in my email and telephone inbox, there's this huge amount of support and waking up of the general public. There was a tremendous number of folks waiting out in the hall, standing room only inside the room where I testified, but out in the halls, just a tremendous number of folks. And just more and more people seeking out alternative sources of information. And I think it's at that state legislature level, where there, especially in certain states, where there's a potential to really make a difference. But these institutionalized, I mean, I just got an email from the Texas Medical Association, TMA, which I'm a member of. But it was just unbelievable. I'm just going to call it propaganda. I mean, it was a poster we could print out about keeping a mask on until you're vaccinated. And even then, keep it on if that makes you feel comfortable. And keep it on kids. I'm like, there's no scientific basis for that. I don't necessarily want to go off on the mask issue. That's been beat to death, I think. But the point is, these mainstream institutional outlets of information, conventional, historically, I would look to trust them, and the public did too, but I'm encouraged by the number of people that seem to be getting information from different sources. And you made a comment before we started recording that you've watched a lot of legislative hearings, and the ability for this one, that the free speech, that people were allowed to just speak what they had to say. So I think that's all encouraging and maybe headed in the right direction.
Yes, I've just written an article about that hearing, which I considered that Texas hearing that you testified in, which I considered to be the best public hearing that I've ever seen in the state legislature, because the people were allowed to speak freely, and they were allowed to bring up issues that are being talked about all over this country right now. And so that special report is going to be published in the NVIC newsletter on Monday. And, you know, I would encourage people to, all of our information, we're a 501c3 charity. Most of our programs and services are for free. In fact, almost all of them. We did do the pay-per-view conference because it was very expensive to pivot to an online conference and get that produced. But it's for free now. So our newsletters are the Vaccine Reaction, which is a weekly journal newspaper. It's free. Our information on MVIC.org is free. So I would encourage you to go to MBIC.org and sign up for our newsletter, which comes out monthly. You get it in your email box. And the Vaccine Reaction, you will also get that. But really importantly, too, is sign up for the MVIC Advocacy Portal on NVICAdvocacy.org. That is the way that we are helping families and healthcare professionals in the states talk to their legislators and get hearings like the one down in Texas. There was a lot of behind-the-scenes organization that went into getting that hearing scheduled. And if you want to play a role in trying to elevate this to a public conversation where we can talk about these things and not be censored, you can do that by becoming active in your state. And we help you with talking points. In fact, on the MVIC Advocacy Portal, where we monitor all the vaccine-related legislation in the states, we have over 500 bills in 49 states that we're following and that are posted on that portal, which again is free. You just register for it. And then you will receive in your email box when legislation is moving in your state. In other words, if you're from Texas, you'll just get Texas information because you can't do anything about the other states. You've got to do it where you live. And you will get talking points on the legislation, because we analyze bills and we give talking points so that you can take them into your legislators. It's really important to understand that if we're going to protect our freedom, we have to participate in this constitutional republic. We cannot just sit in our homes and like something on Facebook. That's not being an activist. If you want your freedom protected, you have to work for it. Because I can tell you, those people who are in power who are making bad vaccine law, they knew. They got active. And in order for us to have good laws in place, we have to participate. And that's what MBIC, when we launched that portal in 2010, we knew that the only chance we had was to organize in the states.
Yeah. Well, God bless you for doing it. Everybody go to nvic.org and learn more about it. NVIC Advocacy is the other website. All right, Barbara, we are up against a break real quick, so we will be back. Everybody, stick with us. We're with Barbara Lowe Fisher, National Vaccine Information Center, nvic.org. I'm Ben Edwards, you're The Cure. We'll be right back. Okay, everybody, we're back. Thank you. We've got Barbara Lowe Fisher from the National Vaccine Information Center. Check out the website, nvic.org. We are talking all things vaccine. Obviously, COVID vaccine is a main topic these days on everybody's mind. Barbara, I really want to get your thoughts on the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, VAERS, which pretty much nobody knew about, including doctors. So historically, maybe some context of what is this Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, who reports on it, are they required to report on it, what's the accuracy of it, how many adverse reactions actually get reported, and then we'll get into the current times and what you think about what's going
on. Well, VAERS is a result of the work that my organization did. I mean, the co-founders of MBIC, I was one of the co-founders that worked with Congress on the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act. And we were parents of DPT vaccine injured children. And we went to Congress and said, nobody's reporting vaccine reactions. And we were responsible for getting the safety provisions in that law. So when you go into a doctor's office and they give you a vaccine information statement that's published by the CDC, that is a safety provision we got in that law. Because back in the 70s and 80s, nobody was getting any information. There was nothing given to parents who came into the doctor's office to get their have their children vaccinated. I didn't get anything. When my son had his reaction, I knew nothing. So the informing, recording, and reporting safety provisions were something that parents of DPT vaccinated children got in that law. Recording, your doctor is supposed to record the name of the vaccine, the manufacturer's name, and the lot number of every vaccine that your child receives in a permanent record. Your doctor, as under that law, 86 law, is also supposed to be reporting adverse events that occur after vaccination to the centralized vaccine adverse event reporting system known as VAERS. At the time, before the law was passed, the way people reported was the manufacturers were supposed to report to the FDA. The private doctors in private practice were supposed to report vaccine reactions to the FDA. And the doctors in public health clinics were supposed to report to the CDC. So it was a split system. The right hand did not know what the left hand was doing. And we said, you have to centralize it. So they did under VAERS. So what did they, in the law, it said that all vaccine providers are supposed to report to VAERS. They're not supposed to be making the decision at the provider level whether or not they think the vaccine caused the adverse event. In other words, the death, the injury, the hospitalization, the trip to the emergency room. They're not supposed to be making that decision. They're only supposed to report. Congress had not put punishments, legal punishments, for failure to report. So what's happened is less than 1% of the adverse events that occur after vaccination are ever reported to VAERS, and that is from a 2011 study that the DHHS paid for an outside company to look at and say, you know, what's the situation with VAERS? And they said, well, less than 1% of the adverse events are ever reported to VAERS. Nevertheless, we also got into that law that VAERS would have to be transparent, that the data that was collected by the CDC and FDA jointly would have to be publicly transparent. We also got in there that if the provider refuses to report or fails to report an adverse event following vaccination, that the person who's been vaccinated or the parent of a child who has been vaccinated or a family member can make the report to VAERS. That was very important because we knew that the doctors weren't reporting. We knew the manufacturers weren't reporting. By the way, the manufacturers are supposed to be reporting also to VAERS. Okay, so it's open to the public, and in fact, this vaccine adverse event reporting system is so rich, even though there's underreporting, that many researchers around the world have used the vaccine adverse event reporting system as a research tool when they're trying to look at how many events, you know, reactions have been reported to different reporting systems around the world, because Europe also has a reporting system that's open. So, you know, it's been a research tool as well. Now, I've noticed this year there is an attack that's been made on VAERS by pharma-associated nonprofits, and I call them political operatives. They're criticizing VAERS because why? It's open to the public. People can report themselves. The data can be seen by people. They don't like it. Why don't they like it? Because this vaccine is this COVID-19 vaccine is so reactive. As of the release of data on through the week ending May 14, 2021, there have been over 225,000 reports of COVID-19 vaccine adverse events filed with VAERS. There have been over 4,000 deaths filed with VAERS after COVID-19 vaccinations. In fact, for the week ending May 14th, 2021, a milestone was reached with VAERS. Over 1 million vaccine adverse events have been reported to VAERS since it became operational in 1990. So that was kind of an interesting threshold. That's for all vaccines. Okay, so for all the vaccines that have been given in the U.S. routinely.
And you just said 220.
But again, we need to keep in mind.
220.
I'm sorry?
You just said 220,000 of those, right?
Over 225,000 reports. Yeah. Simply on COVID-19
so
vaccines.
A quarter of those
and
million.
Over a million for all vaccines since its operation.
Yeah, so a quarter of all the adverse events ever reported to VAERS are COVID-19 adverse events.
At this point, now I have to say that 1% adverse event reporting rate, I would say that we have a higher rate for COVID-19 vaccines. Why? Yeah. Because it's the whole thing, everything that our whole lives have been consumed this year with COVID-19. And people are starting to find out about VAERS. So I would say you have a higher reporting for VAERS. Nevertheless, this vaccine is very reactive. If you go into, on our website, we have something called MedAlerts. MedAlerts.org has been operational since 2003, and it can be gotten to through our website at MVIC.org. You go up to the top menu at MVIC.org, and click on vaccine reactions, and you will get to the MedAlerts website. This is a special search engine that was developed in 2003 by a very intelligent man, and he has operated it since then. And he makes reports every once in a while about what's happening in VAERS, but it's a search engine that makes the VAERS data easily available. The CDC runs a search engine called Wonder. But this MedAlert search engine is more responsive to the average person. It's more easily navigated. And so if you go into that MedAlerts.org search engine, you will be able to search for things like different vaccines. All the vaccines are in there. And you may say you may want to say hepatitis B vaccine, how many deaths? You can search for that. You can search for how many emergency room visits or how many life-threatening events. So it's very rich, MedAlerts, in terms of how you can drill down and look at different outcomes associated with a particular vaccine. And I would encourage people to become familiar because there's descriptions in there. The reports that are filed with theirs are described in the MedAlerts search engine. You can pull up the number of the report. Every report has a special number. And you can see what's been reported and look at what's happening out there after a vaccination and particularly after these COVID-19 vaccines. We're seeing a lot of cardiac issues, cardiac arrests, and heart inflammation. We're seeing bleeding disorders, the blood clots, and the immune thrombocytopenic purpura, or immune, what they call it, ITT, thrombosis-type events, and blood clots and bleeding disorders. We're seeing sudden death, for sure, sudden death within hours, actually minutes, hours, or days of vaccination. So I would encourage people just take a look and see what that looks like.
Yeah, and my little comment on here, I don't recall being educated on VAERS in medical school or residency, and it's possible my recollection's just not there, but I for sure never reported any adverse event and wasn't really trained in how to look for that, besides an obvious, you know, what you think about an allergy reaction, like a redness at the injection site or something like that. And so my bigger concern is doctors aren't trained in how to look for adverse reactions, and we just automatically, we're not going to think about it. When someone comes into the ER with a heart attack and they're 55 years old, I imagine we're just going to think they had a heart attack. To really consider that, well, they were vaccinated 3 days ago. And that's a story I've heard over and over and over from my patients, family members and friends, and just in the community is, you know, this group of ladies from such and such town went had a COVID vaccine party, and they all went and got vaccinated. And within 2 weeks, five of the 10 ladies are dead from sudden death, died in their sleep, heart attack. And I don't know. I don't have, these aren't people I know personally, but I would wonder how many of those were associated and reported on VAERS. I'm afraid doctors aren't associating some of these sudden cardiac events and strokes and other things, PE, pulmonary embolism, with the vaccine. That's number one concern. Number two is I've seen some reports, people crunching the numbers and data analysis of VAERS, and that it appears there may be a backlog in the CDC putting the data out, these reports are maybe being reported but not published, that a lot of the 4,000 deaths and just the adverse reactions in general, when you look at the symptom onset date in January, February, seems to be pretty prominent, but not so much May and April. So do you have any comment or thought there as far as a backlog, so to speak?
Well, you know, I've heard a lot of rumors. The data is being whitewashed. They're not putting all the information in. But there certainly is a lag time. There's at least the latest release is through May 14th, so there's a 7-day lag time. I think it's very difficult because a vendor, the CDC and FDA select a vendor to actually do the number crunching. It's not all handled by the CDC or FDA employees, so. That's another layer of complexity. I have no information. I have no proof or information that VAERS is withholding data or manipulating data. I know there have been instances in the past where people say, "Oh, my report disappeared," or "I can't find it." But I have no hard information on that.
Yeah. Well, and I would think that, especially this being an emergency authorized use. I'll use the term vaccine, but it's not officially approved. Obviously, the safety study's not there. We're in the study now. The study won't be completed for 1 to 2 more years, depending on Moderna or Pfizer. So you would think we would have an extra diligence, an extra level of heightened sense of suspicion and wanting to track these folks really, really well, because they are basically part of the clinical trial. And I feel like that's, we've kind of dropped the ball there, to say the least.
Definitely a post-marketing surveillance. They are definitely part of that. Yeah. I think that there is another system that's an internal system that's not open to the public, called the V-Safe system for COVID-19 vaccines. But see, it's not open to the public. Therefore, whatever comes out of V-Safe is really only held by the CDC internally at HHS. It can't be replicated. It can't be double-checked because it's not open to the public. They also have these large-linked databases, the Vaccine Safety Data Link, that's been around for at least 25 years, and that is also internal, and there's been a lot of controversy about that, and independent scientists who have wanted to go in there and look at this information that is these studies that the CDC is conducting when it pronounces vaccines to be safe, or we've looked at that adverse event and it's nothing, which is mostly what they say. You know, everything's a coincidence. The problem is that we have too heavy a reliance on epidemiological studies, on comparing groups of people rather than doing the bench science, the basic science research into the biological mechanisms of vaccine injury and death, what happens at the cellular molecular level when you inject a person with, for example, these mRNA COVID-19 vaccines that are using technology that has never been licensed before for humans. You're right, these are emergency use authorization. These are experimental vaccines. They have not been officially approved by the FDA. This is an experiment. I mean, you cannot say anything but this. Giving these vaccines to millions of people is a human experiment. And how well is it being monitored? It doesn't look like it's being monitored very well. If they're simply saying, oh, because you're in your 50s or 60s or 70s or whatever, and you die of a heart attack within days or a week of vaccination, that it's a coincidence because you were old.
Yeah.
Or say you had an underlying heart condition, for them to write that off is unscientific. Yeah. When they don't even, I mean, if you do the research, you know they know so little about this COVID-19, the SARS-CoV-2 virus that causes COVID-19 disease. They don't know how to test for efficacy. That they're now saying that if you've got antibodies, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're immune. Well, antibodies is how they measure in clinical trials whether or not, you know, I mean, antibodies has been the standard for showing that a vaccine works.
Yeah.
Antibodies is supposed to be the standard for whether you're immune or not.
Right.
And now they're saying, you know, like, it just doesn't matter, just get vaccinated.
Yep.
Doesn't matter if you've got T-cell immunity, just get vaccinated. And there's evidence that if you've already had COVID-19 disease, if you've recovered it from it, you could actually be at risk for having a severe reaction if you get vaccinated. You could have a cytokine storm situation. Why? Because we're all different. We all present it differently genetically, epigenetically. We have different microbiomes. We live in different types of environments, have different kinds of co-exposures to environmental toxins. We're not all the same, and yet they take a one-size-fits-all approach. Yeah. Why? Because it's utilitarian.
Yeah.
They don't care if you go down. It's in service to the greater good. Right. This is why I come back again to say we have to get rid of the utilitarian rationale when it comes to public health policy.
Yeah,
we have to care about everyone because every life is important.
Yeah. Made in the image of God. The individuality is what makes this thing so, and especially for the kids. And that's probably the vast majority of the emails I get from around the country are from parents concerned about their kids and this recent opening up the vaccine to, I think, 12 to 16-year-olds now. The American frontline doctor, Simone Gold, just filed a motion, I think this was yesterday, a temporary restraining order against the use of COVID vaccine in children. So, Barbara, you've been in this for a long time. DPT and MMR, the HPV, I mean, you've been fighting these things for a long time, and the potential harm to kiddos and the informed consent nature of it, but especially in regards to COVID-19, where kids really aren't affected at all. I think 287 kids in total have died, and I believe most of those had some underlying significant pre-existing condition like cancer or congenital heart disease or very premature, et cetera. I'm not minimizing 287 deaths since January 2020. Every life is precious. But the overall mortality rate out of 72 million kids, I mean, you're talking about a basically 0% odds with an really unknown safety profile. So from the perspective of parents with kids, I mean, do you take this fight more legally? Are there things, obviously Simone Gold and American Frontline Doctors are doing something, but what are your thoughts there? Are there avenues or places people can go to seek out legal help? Or what do you say to those parents that are asking?
Well, you know, they are coming for the children. You know, they have just said that the Pfizer vaccine can be given to children as young as 12. They only had a couple of thousand people in that study, children between 12 and 15 in that study that they used to give the expand the EUA for the Pfizer vaccine, mRNA vaccine. Only 1,000 of them got vaccinated. This is a shoddy, unacceptable information, scientific information upon which to base a universal use policy of COVID-19 vaccine in children as young as 12 years old. And they say you can give, they're just saying you can give it with all the other vaccines for that age group when they didn't study that at all. So, I mean, that's a complete crapshoot. They have no information on how the other vaccines are going to act when you give it in combination with COVID-19 vaccine. It's shocking. It's a shocking dereliction of duty at the FDA for them to allow that. But, you know, I think that what do we do? We are a nation of laws. We elect people to be our lawmakers. Unless we, the young people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, unless they will step up to the plate and run for office and put people of integrity and honesty who are not going to be bought out by pharma into positions in the state level, the county level, and the federal level, we're doomed. Because only if you have people making the laws who have integrity and courage and are not bought will you be able to have good laws governing you. Now, that's a long game. That is a long game, but others have played it, and they're now in power.
Yep.
So if you want to turn the country around, people are going to have to step up and participate in this constitutional republic, as I said earlier. In the meantime, people are moving. I live in Florida now, the great state of Florida, with a great governor, and I've been here all during the pandemic, and it's been an open state. And why? Because the elected officials in the state said we're not shutting down for a year and a half. We shut down for about 4 months, and then it just was, this is enough, you know. And our economy is doing very well. So there are differences in states. People are moving out of the states that have taken this communitarian greater good, everybody's got to do it, and you know, we don't care about your businesses, we don't care about your mortgage, we don't care about anything, but you got to do what we say. So there are political fault lines that are being created by people who don't want to live under oppression. And so if you don't like the state you're living in, if you're oppressed, then you need to go somewhere else. Other than that, you need to stay and fight and get people elected who will not oppress you.
Yep. Amen. Well, and we're almost out of time here, but I did want to ask, do you know anything about a potential second Nuremberg trial? I read the other day, 1,000 lawyers, 10,000 medical experts, including physicians, are gathered up. I think this is mostly in Europe, but starting legal proceedings against CDC, WHO, and the Davos Group for Crimes Against Humanity. Do you know anything about that?
Well, you know, I think that it all will be revealed. I do feel that. we just have to watch the, because there are people in place now, both at who are attorneys. There are physicians and scientists who are rebelling. I do think that the truth will eventually come out, no matter how the bought media, which has done a deal with industry and government, and is controlled, because there are only about 7 corporations who run the global media now. That didn't used to be that way when I came into this work in the 80s. It was diversified. It's not anymore. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that the citizen journalists and the lawyers and a lot of other people are going to be investigating and coming up with the documents that are going to show that there has been a lot of corruption, unfortunately, in some federal agencies and at high political levels. And, you know, hopefully it'll be in time in order to turn this ship around. Mm-hmm. And I think we all personally have to take responsibility for what we do every day, whether it's educating just your neighbor or anybody you meet, but taking the stands that we need to take intelligently and nonviolently. I'm a big believer in nonviolent social change. We can do it if we will see clearly and we will take action.
Amen. Well, Barbara Lowe, thank you so much for your time today. We are out of time. Thank you for all your efforts. I can't imagine what the last year has been like. I mean, you've been in this battle for a long time, but to see what's happened over this past year, year and a half, I imagine it's been quite the journey for you.
It has been a journey, and I appreciate all that you do and the courage it took for you to testify in Texas, and I look forward to us having another conversation in the future.
Okay, awesome. Well, me too. It's been a pleasure. As always, y'all check out the National Vaccine Information Center, nvic.org. Sign up for their newsletters, for their alerts, and get involved, like Barbara said. We will be back next week with another great show. Thank y'all for listening and tuning in. Share this with your friends so we can educate the world on how to be healthy. I'm Dr. Ben Edwards. You're the cure.